American Road Trip Talk begins after this message.
American Road Magazine would like to thank Ranker.com, EnjoyTravelLife.com, and TravelersPress.com for honoring us with excellent ratings on their recent lists of outstanding travel magazines. American Road was listed among the top 25 travel magazines in 2024 by Ranker, by Travelers Press in the top 25 travel magazines 2024, one of only three in that group that are dedicated to travel in the USA. And Enjoy Travel Life rated American Road Magazine as number one in the best specialty magazines for travelers 2024 category. To say the least, we are grateful. The horizon is wide and the highway is calling. That means it's time for another episode of American Road Trip Talk. I'm your host, Gary Mance, with a welcome and an invitation to travel the byways and back roads of yesteryear, searching for America in every incomparable mile. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you along for the ride. Glad to be working alongside Nathan Miller, our producer. This is American Road Trip Talk. We'll be back with the interview right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I want to bring attention to a life-saving product called Alert Drops. Drowsy driving is one of the most catastrophic problems in America, and Alert Drops will stop it. What is Alert Drops? Alert Drops is a simple spray on the tongue made out of citric acid, sour lemon, and water. A simple spray on the tongue, nothing in your system, and you're naturally awake, naturally alert. Go to alertdrops.com. Very important. Go to alertdrops.com and stay safe.
Real people, real life, real radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back to American Road Trip Talk. Today, I am going to speak with, I have the privilege of interviewing our friend Joey Medea about Route 66, Ike, and the interstate. Joey Medea is an actor, screenwriter, audio dramatist, playwright, novelist, director, and podcast host. This doesn't even begin to exhaust his resume, folks. In addition, I should mention, and certainly pertinent to today's episode, Joey Medea is an avid researcher into historical events, people, and places. Once again, Joey Medea, welcome to American Road Trip Talk.
Gary, it is always a privilege and an honor to be here with you.
Likewise for me, sir. Route 66, Ike, and the interstate. What a story to be told. The first thing that comes to mind when I put all that together is we're talking about an era of transition, but it's really like jamming together eras to create a transitional time unlike any other in American history. And there are so many implications. All we can do is get as much information out to our listeners as we possibly can within a short time. So let me begin, Joey, by asking you, please focus on the origins of Route 66, including a luminary named Cyrus Avery, the highway commissioner of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a businessman who led an effort to link Chicago, Illinois, and Los Angeles, California. Through his hometown of Tulsa. Cyrus Avery, as I understand it, and thanks to you for your avid research, Joey, Mr. Avery became known as the father of Route 66. In capsule form, please tell us the story of Route 66 and Cyrus Avery.
Right. It's a wonderful story. It's the macrocosm and the microcosm of America. So when we call Cyrus Avery called Route 66 America's Main Street, and he meant it. All these businesses that could be linked for travelers. And, you know, I grew up in the 1970s where the road trip was an institution, a weekend or a week with the family. We mostly did weekends in our family. But this trip where we all piled in the station wagon and we would go on these trips. And Cyrus Avery had this big vision, and he was needfully and respectfully forceful in his vision as great great innovators are. So again, this is a macro micro story. So, you know, we had the old trails and we had the Pony Express and then we had the railroad, and it was all about Western expansion and getting the most from our country. Then World War One came along and the world became a smaller place and America was a little more vulnerable than it had been. So everyone was looking at, in 1919 and 1920, there was a Lincoln Highway and a Bankhead Highway, two expeditions to take military vehicles literally across the country. So they started from New York or Washington, D.C. They went south, they hooked west, and the news was not good. I want you to remember that one of the key people from that 1919 motor convoy was a lieutenant colonel named Dwight David Eisenhower. So just remember that as this story develops. So Route 66 actually came together pretty quickly. You had a bunch of state highway organizations. They all wanted to get on board. There were these existing trails. They were these existing pathways. This is the 1920s. So it took about a half a decade to really get this thing rolling. And what was the highway going to be called? There was some dispute between governors in different states who wanted to claim 66. There were some alternative ideas. But I just think, you know, the Bobby Troop song and beyond, Route 66 just has a beautiful sound to it. Like, how could it not be Route 66? So this is the time of the grow up of the Bureau of Public Roads. So there's this concerted effort. So it comes together pretty quickly. And what it does is all these towns flower. Just like, Gary, you know, during the time of the railroad, when you needed a railroad stop for water or supplies or for food, a town grew up. And that was their whole purpose for being. Well, so many of these towns became Route 66 towns. And for about three decades, a little more, mid-20s to the mid-50s, the road was humming. You know, it adopted a new name, the Mother Road, and that was from John Steinbeck, right? And the Grapes of Wrath. So we owe so much to Steinbeck. And if people want to go out and watch the John Ford film, you can really see it's like a time capsule of what Route 66 was during the time of the Dust Bowl and when it really got going and the time of Woody Guthrie. And it all came together pretty smoothly because, you know, that American will, when everybody wants something, it happens, and it happens pretty quickly and it happens pretty well.
Indeed, it does. When you have the political will and the money, whether you have the money or you find the money, great visions can come true. When it comes to Dwight David Eisenhower, before he was a general, before he was president, he was a lieutenant colonel, was he not? Mm-hmm. He was involved in one of these expeditions personally. He would have a view and a vision of his own. And I'm wondering how much, no, we're talking about Dwight D. Eisenhower pre-presidency, pre-being named a general, but being a lieutenant colonel. And, you know, there was a little matter of World War II that needed to be taken care of as well. With all of this, can you imagine the vision as it put itself together in the mind of Mr. Eisenhower and then for him to see it come to fruition? This is one of those visions that is absolutely monumental. It's the kind of thing that would, I think, scare the heck out of people contemplating today. You know, we talk about big visions for America. Here is one that was going on largely, if not entirely, but largely anyway, during the Cold War. So we had that to worry about at the same time.
We did. And if I could encapsulate Ike in one word, it would be pragmatic. And he used that pragmatism as a force of nature. He knew what the country needed. And I think for him, several things all came into play. He was, of course, the Supreme Allied Commander, World War II. Spent time in Germany, saw the Autobahns, when this is the way we do it, thinking back to 20 years before, where it was a slog, Gary, trying to get, you can go to the National Archives, you can go to the Dwight Eisenhower Online Presidential Library, and you can see photos of these big military trucks just mired in the mud. The first one, they went 3,251 miles in 62 days. So they averaged about 45 to 60 miles an hour. When they took the southern route, which matches more closely to what became Route 66, it got bogged down to the tune of, like, they were lucky if they could do 30 miles a day. So this was a major concern. So he goes overseas. He sees a lot. The atomic age comes in, like you said, so post World War II. He comes back, continues up the ladder, takes the position as the president, and in the 1950s, he says something has to be done. We have to up our efforts. We need to make this happen. And what's interesting, the macro micro, is how the highway system grew. Route 66 began to die, and all the towns, or many of the towns and the businesses, followed because of this pragmatism.
There was, you talked about what I would call the heyday of the Mother Road. What do historians generally regard, what do they generally have to say about this eclipsing of Route 66? Because I can imagine that there would be perhaps generations of families that settled in along Route 66, established businesses, thinking that their family business would seemingly go on forever, that it would be handed down. Well, maybe that's still true. I don't know. It could be in this or that case. But all of a sudden, and if you look at the pop culture of the time, there you can pick up just a glimmer of this here and there, where there's a reference, a line of dialogue about, you know, they're going to have a highway coming through here. People aren't going to stop here anymore. This idea of being bypassed. And when I hear about Route 66 being bypassed, I'm thinking of countless people who lived and worked and poured their hearts and souls into the commercial aspect and the hometown aspect of Route 66, feeling like before long, we're going to be abandoned.
I think that's what it was. And you're talking a time in the 1950s where patriotism, the greatest generation, the boomers, come back from World War II. They saved the world. Dwight David Eisenhower has saved the world. So this is complex. The very elements that Route 66 owed a lot of its strength and popularity to, for instance, post-World War II, during World War II and post-World War II, 12 military bases sprung up on Route 66. There were countless others. So these are airfields, ammo depots. Did you know, Gary, that nearly 400,000 German and Italian prisoners of war were held at internment camps along Route 66? I didn't know that.
You did the research, and I didn't know it until I read it in the notes that you sent me. I had no idea.
No, which is amazing that they shipped all these folks over, you know, on these big boats, like the Queen Mary was used to, you know, bring prisoners here and there. So you have that element. You have the atomic age. So there's wild things going on along Route 66 with atomic testing. Really strange things. The U.S. government in the 1950s to the early 60s spent $70 million in the quest to save $8 million by exploring using atomic bombs as opposed to dynamite to clear paths for the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. So it was a crazy time.
I vote for the dynamite.
Yeah. I mean, that's our government at work. And plus them going, oh, what are we going to do with all this radioactive material? Excuse me. I'm so sorry. But the point being,
a repository for so much of it wound up being in Nevada.
Yes, exactly right. And all this mystique comes up, Nevada, Arizona, especially Nevada, about ufology and all that kind of stuff, which is a whole. But What's interesting is because of Route 66 and these military bases, and even my wife, Tanya, who you know, her father moved the family out to Arizona after the Vietnam War because he had spent some time there and loved it so much. But there was a 74% growth in the Southwest population because of the military that had gone through and the needs of these big bases, these airfields, and so on and so forth to bring the people. But it was ultimately the need as the Cold War grew, as you already mentioned, as the nuclear threat became very, very real, right? Bay of Pigs and all this kind of stuff. Before that, Ike wanted this in place. He wanted these nuclear evacuation routes. He wanted to move military men and material because that's what he did during World War II. So it's so interesting.
And as you said, with a pragmatic mind, to have
Yeah.
to move this, I mean, who better to turn to than President Eisenhower, who, as Supreme Allied Commander in World War II, had to decide so much, critically decide the fate of the world, really, with D-Day. So a massive operation like this seems to fit into the Eisenhower destiny.
Yeah, he was uniquely suited to make these kind of decisions. So you asked about the perception as these businesses died and all. The great luminaries of the Route 66 lore, the story, some of whom I'm going to be working with soon, which I'm really excited about, they refer to the highway system as the slab, SLAB, a slab, right? And that is so illustrative because there became literal ghost towns, towns that were thriving when that bypass happens. And as Americans, we talk about, well, progress has a price. It sounds good, PR. Progress has a price. But yes, for these multi-generational families who ran these diners, ran these truck stops, I mean, by the mid-1980s, it was gone. So much of it was gone. The high Route 66 was literally decommissioned in 1984. I mean, that's pretty definitive.
It is, and definitive in the lives of so many. How many, I'm not asking for a specific number, but in terms of a trend, Joey, what about the immigrant families with this continuation of the westward expansion, people moving to the Southwest in droves because they experienced it and loved it, so they wanted to settle down there? Along Route 66, were there not many families who came from the old world, came over from Europe, perhaps Asia, and got something going for themselves? And they brought their old world work ethic. And I can imagine them just being brokenhearted over a sense of dislocation after they had their own dreams, much smaller than an interstate highway system, but big dreams in terms of themselves as individuals and also the family dream that they thought would carry on and on. There's a lot of heartache involved.
There really is, and it's across, there's the Hispanic population, there's the indigenous population, of course, and this really comes into Arizona, New Mexico, their relationship with the military bases, their relationship with the atomic testing sites. And Gary, as you know, because we did an episode here, African Americans, there was a need in the 1930s for Vincent Gre Victor Green to put out the Green Book, formerly known as the Negro Motorist Green Book. Here are safe places. Here are towns where you don't want to be caught after dark. And I think that Route 66 was very much that diversity, that multicultural diversity is so core. And as we're approaching now the centennial in 2026, the 100th birthday, there are so many people who are very determined to celebrate that multicultural diversity, which I find very exciting as a storyteller.
Oh, yes, me as well. And isn't it wonderful that a decommissioned highway would have a 100th anniversary to celebrate? There's enough still going on. Route 66, decommissioned, has a future. In a way, that's a miracle.
It is, and it's really, I'm very privileged to be working on some projects where we're kind of the next generation of custodians of the story of Route 66. You have the quintessential mom and pop shops. I mean, you have barber shops. You have the big Harvey hotels, right? Which I believe it was MGM celebrated in 1946 with the big musical with Judy Garland. So you have that mystique of those. And they fed 3,000 soldiers a day who were training and leaving for the Pacific Theater, Gary. 3,000 people a day they would feed sandwiches as they got off the trains. So you have all this multi-level and the story of women on the Mother Road. There's some wonderful, wonderful stories of women who ran restaurants and who ran hotels. And the most famous architect in all of the Harvey hotels was a female. So you have all these wonderful layers to celebrate. And I think also to some things, because America is complex with race and racism and some things that we have to reconcile. And I think this is a very good time in American history to reconcile those. So celebration, contemplation, look how far we've come. How far do we still have to go?
That really puts it in a nice framework, Joey. Absolutely. One of the things that I find enticing, there's a lot to entice one to make the trek, Chicago, and they say, go where it started in Chicago and head out to Los Angeles. That's the way to see it because of the way it was built and expanded. You will see more that way without having to turn around and go back, you know, right, unless you want to do it that way. But the individuals created individual attractions, roadside attractions, diners that had grandma's cherry pie or whatever it might be, you know, there so that you can go to a town and not have a cookie cutter experience. You're going to experience something or things that are unique and that will keep you coming back if you are so inclined.
Yeah, I mean, I've never driven the entire length. I went from Oklahoma to Arizona. So I missed a couple of states at the top and the one at the end. But you know, there's everything from the Cadillac Ranch to the Big Blue Whale. You never know when you're going to see a building with a giant, what they used to call the muffler men. Mm-hmm. These big, like, fiberglass formed guys, and some of them are holding rockets, and some of them are holding hot dogs, and some of them are holding axes. You know, there's bottle sculptures, and there's you name it. There were weird exotic petting zoos. There's the Merrimack Caverns in Missouri where Jesse James supposedly hung out. And then a dude showed up, 102 years old, and said, by the way, I am Jesse James. It was a Pinkerton detective who was staying at my house who happened to look like me, who Robert Ford shot. I mean, the deeper I dive into it, and I spent now 15 months doing really, really deep, deep research. Because I think at this time in American history, America's Main Street is still the lifeblood. It's still the veins. It's this concentrated where as you move from town to town, you just get the personality of unique American regions. And I love that. Where else can you really, you know, do that?
And as you make your way along Route 66, you meet people who are absolutely committed to preserving the heritage of Route 66. That's a gorgeous aspect of traveling Route 66, the Mother Road, Yes, and in their minds it still is, and they want to keep it that way in the popular imagination.
Absolutely. And the popular imagination wants it. And what's interesting, Gary, is I'm talking to people who run these different things. If you look at their guest books, like 50% of the people are coming from Europe and coming from Asia. So I don't know if a lot of Americans really appreciate how quintessential Route 66 is to our core identity. It pulls together all the way from the early, you were talking about immigrants from Coronado in the 1500s and going right straight through to modern day, where some of these Route 66 towns are revitalizing, they are absolutely thriving, and embracing modern technology, embracing modern techniques. But then if you want a specific kind of fried chicken, or you want a corn dog done in a certain way, you know where
You
to
can
go.
have it. You can have it. Joey Medea, thank you so much for joining us once again. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to American Road Trip Talk. Along with Thomas and Becky Repp, co-founders of American Road Magazine, we remind you to visit our website, AmericanRoadMagazine.com, to preview the current issue. Until next time, dream well and drive safely on the American Road.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.